This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you all very much for coming. I'm thrilled to be here. This is a great show. I'm just thrilled to be here. I'm happy that you guys are here playing pinball. I was exceptionally thrilled to see the Stern Electronics. I guess we're going to do the PowerPoint thing in a minute. That's fine. That's good. That's okay. It's all right. That's a good picture of me and of Mustang. I was really thrilled, though, to see the Stern Electronics games out there. I played most of them and a few that were almost Stern Electronics games, like our conversion kit, the Gamatron game, which is Flight 2000 as a narrow body. I managed to prove that conversion in pinball was not economically viable, although some people tried it after me. I'm going to talk for just a short while, and then I'll take questions about anything except what our next game is or the game after that or what have you, because most of you know I won't. How many of you all have either heard me in person or listened to some of these videos and heard me speak before? Oh, boy, that makes it really hard. Okay, who wants to do the speech for me? It's the, we can, you know, you've heard me talk about history, pinball history, some of that stuff. I got some pictures of that you might have seen. You've heard me talk about our design philosophy, what we're doing. Yes? Have you heard me talk about beer? How many of you all heard the beer, too? How many have heard me talk about beer? Oh, not that many of you. We're going to do a little beer then for a while. Beer is important. Beer is important because these new beer, these IPOs, you know, you can get them in any amount of alcohol. And you go to the young people's places and they list the name of the beer and the amount of alcohol, you know, 5%, which is a waste of time and all that, and 7%, okay, 9 to 11%. I drink vodka. And so if my drink is this big, if my drink is this big, it's got 40% alcohol, it's got that much alcohol in it. I really have this up here to drink water, but it's a good demo. My beer is this big. It also has, at 10% alcohol, that much alcohol in it. So this stuff's serious stuff. It's good. I like it. It works. It has something to do with Harry Williams, and some of you have heard this, he was working on a game, Hot Hand, and had a big flipper about this big at the top, and it would go in a circle, motorized, knock balls out of little cups. And he said, the kids are going to love this feature. And I put my arm around Harry and said, that's great, Harry, but your job is to get people drunk and keep them drunk. Because we were in the bar business. We were in the street locations, and that was the basis of our business. So we'll come back to beer pretty soon. We'll come back to bars because I like bars. Old game people, you know, there was a lot of drinking in this industry in the 50s and 60s and 70s. We weren't a collector business. We were, boy, am I digressed. We were a game operator business, and games were in bars, and game operators went to 4, 5, 6, 7 bars a day and collected the money out of the games, and of course they had to buy a round for the bar. So the game operators then went to see the game distributors who sold them the games and went out to dinner or lunch with them, and they all drank, had to buy a round. And when the distributors went to the manufacturers, they all drank. It was a drinking business because it was a bar business. It was an alcoholics business, I guess. At United Manufacturing, which Williams, United was Lynn Durant's company, and Williams, Harry Williams and Lynn were partners at one time, and then they split. Williams had Williams Pinball, or Williams Manufacturing Company. Put my photos up for a minute, would you, so we know who we're talking about here, just for a second. I'm going to switch here. I just switch gears right away. We'll come back to Mustang. I have to write that down. Mustang. So I got beer, Mustang, and bars. Okay. We come back to you. Got the We're going to get the other one up here in a minute. So in any event, Lynn Durant was United Manufacturing, and Harry was Williams. They separated from each other. I'll show you Harry in a minute. Lynn invented the shuffle alley, or puck bowler, in the trash bin. Ah, that's not Lynn or Harry. That's just a picture I like. Somebody once knew what that was. Do you guys know what that picture is? I didn't write it down. Somebody told me. Okay, never mind. Next picture is, that's my father as a young man, younger man, fairly young, much younger than I am now. Give me two pictures past here. That's my father and Sam. That's Harry Williams as a young man. He goes way back in the business. But he and Lynn Durant were partners, and I was talking about Shuffle Alley. You all know what a Shuffle Alley is, a puck bowler? Everybody knows that. In 1949, he invented the Shuffle Alley, and these were for bars and for arcade, you know, penny arcades or whatever. They were not pennies at that point. He made 525 of them a day at United Manufacturing. And he sold them for $225. They cost $125 to make. So he made $100 a piece times 525 games a day, which is $52,500, or roughly $250,000 a week, $260,000 a week. It was a big business. He died broke, but that's another question. Any event, I started talking about that for some reason. I was really back to, let's go back to, we got beer, bars, Mustang. Now I'm going to jump you back for a minute here. I'm going to jump you back and forth because I'm sort of that's my mind. Am I okay? Am I doing the right one back there, Jim? Is that all right? Okay, we'll do Mustang. Mustang, well, first of all, car manufacturer is, some of you have heard me say this, but we're doing cars, and we'll talk about why we're doing Mustang. But car manufacturer, Mustang designer, all of that is very similar in what we are, a pinball manufacturer. Well, why is that similar? We design games because we love games. These guys design cars because they love cars. But nobody does it just as an art form. Well, some people do, some hobbyists do, so forth, just because it's cool and what have you. But if you're really going to make mass volumes, you're doing it because you want people to play them, to drive them, whatever the case may be. And therefore, you must do them so that you can manufacture them. You must design the car to be manufactured, and you must manufacture it and sell it and so forth. You must have a business plan that says you're going to make money at that, so you make money designing that car so that you can have fun designing the next car. If you don't make money manufacturing, then you don't get to make another car. Same thing with pinball. Our job is not to design pinball. We are a manufacturer. We are first and foremost a manufacturer. We're an American manufacturer. We make our games in the Chicagoland area where all pinball should be made because all the people who work on it and design them and so forth are in Chicago. The people who own the tooling for Little Plastic Boat are in Chicago. So, that's where it is. And even when Atari made pinballs in California, when Steve Ritchie was out there, a lot of the parts, they came from Chicago. People have design studios for pinball in Chicago. That's where it is. But it's manufacturing. You have to manufacture it. You have to have a business plan that makes some sense, and you have to make it. And the biggest part, the easiest part is the design. The hardest part is making them. Same with the car. So, I mean, we see a lot of similarities. You guys trick out pinball machines. People trick out Mustangs or other cars, or Harleys, there's a group of enthusiasts who love pinball. There's a group of enthusiasts who love Mustangs or Harleys. You all know we made Harley. Same type of concept, same kind of enthusiast. But outside of the enthusiast market, there's a bunch of other people who play pinball or would like to play pinball if we can expose it to them, and if we make it the right game for them, which we... casual player, right game for that casual player. We'll tie all this together eventually. Maybe. Or maybe you'll have to come back another time for me to tie it together. So we have we have the same type of core player or core car collector and the same kind of not core people. Just, you know, they're going to drive a Mustang, but they're not really be into it and collecting and what have you. I was looking on websites for cars for sale in Australia, and I found about 1,000 Mustangs for sale in Australia, ranging from $27,000 to $980,000. Something was very special about the $980,000 car. I don't know what it is because I'm a pinball guy, so I don't know what it was, but something was very special about it. But it's the same kind of thing. You know, you have people remake parts for Mustang. They make new Mustangs. You got people who collect Medieval Madness and people who remake Medieval Madness. It's just parallel. You know, it's the same type of thing, just, you know, a different group. So why are we doing Mustang? Well, first of all, this is a picture of the new Mustang. It's introduced. Its 50-year birthday is April 17th, and there's a lot of publicity and a lot of interest, and there's a lot of Mustang collectors. There's actually, I'm sure you won't be surprised, there's more Mustang collectors than there are pinball collectors. There's a lot of people, and if a few of them can get interested in a Mustang pinball, then we've introduced some new people to pinball. Maybe they'll get interested in a Mustang pinball, and then they'll want another pinball. Maybe we can get some, you know, broaden our base. Everybody in game design tries to do the same thing, and that is, and in all products, but especially game design, tries to broaden the player base. And, you know, you want to keep your core players. Go back to my father's day. You saw a picture of him in his day. You want to keep your core player, but introduce new players and broaden the player base so that, first of all, you make more money so you can design more games. And second is to enlarge the whole customer, the whole market, so that you can continue and you can grow. If you don't grow, you go backwards. So Mustang, this is the first time that it is a world car. And that means that it's going to be sold throughout the world by Ford dealers, not just, you know, some people gray marketing in cars into Australia or something like that, throughout the world. When they said a world car, one gets a little concerned. Well, is it going to be a littler car, a plasticky car, a Ford Focus or something like that? Which is a fine little car, but it's not a Mustang. The Mustang itself is about 2 inches wider, a little bit lower, and as beefy as Mustangs have ever been. Can I have the next picture? The next picture is a big blank, so we won't do that one. The next picture. This is the Pro that is here. We are in production of this game. We've shipped hundreds of them into our export markets, and we're starting to ship them in America. How many of you have played the Mustang here? Oh, good. Good. The rest of you, please play the game. I need you to play the game. We bring it here. We want you all to see it. And this is the Pro version of the game. Give me a picture, please. Next picture. And that's the play field, which you've all seen. The cars, I will tell you, will be varied. We get an assortment of cars to put on these games, and so some are 1 year, some are red, some are yellow, another year, but they're all interchangeable. Should a Mustang enthusiast want their own car, and if it's available, you know, there's two different manufacturers of these 124 cars, and the game is set to accept either of those on it, so that the Mustang enthusiast can change his car periodically when he buys another car. If he can get that model in his color, he can change it on his game. The next picture, please. This is the cabinet. You've seen all this because the game is here. So let's do the next one. And that's the playfield. John Yowsey, who does many pinball games, is the artist for the playfield. So if we'd go to the next picture. And this is a SolidWorks drawing of the game. You've seen the game, but this is an engineering SolidWorks. SolidWorks is a three-dimensional computer design program that's used very commonly and regularly today. Any of you familiar with SolidWorks? Okay, so everybody turn to the guy next to you and explain it to them. And then explain it to me, because I couldn't do this. But generally, it's quite an aid, because you really model things. You can make them work on the play field. You turn it. You can see what really fits and doesn't fit. Pinball machines used to be drawn on a big drafting table on full-size paper. You know, in the modern days of drafting tables, they had electric erasers. That was a great advancement. Before that, it was just a hand eraser. And by the way, I took drafting in high school. I was horrible, horrible. My handwriting shows that. But Harry Williams, he was great. Any event, now it's done in SolidWorks. John Trudeau is the SolidWorks game designer who designed this playfield. And for those of you who've played it, and those who haven't, you see that it's got drop targets, it's got a spinning target, it's got multiple entry ramp and orbit area with a diverter in the back, targets behind the drop targets, what have you. So if those of you who haven't played it, please go play it here, and you'll see. Very open play field. I hope you all have enjoyed playing it. And of course, then comes the other versions of it. So let's look at that for just a minute. This is the boss play field, which happens to be the same as the limited edition play field. You'll notice that the car is now on a turntable that turns, controlled by the button, the same button that you see on some of our other games on the front molding. And as it stops at different places, you're picking different modes and features that you want to play. Instead of a post in the back diverting the ball, it has two diverter gates on either side of the lanes, of the top lanes up there. It has another diverter with a wire ramp across the play field. Some 164 cars mounted on it, and other odds and ends, other features on it. And it, of course, has a different artwork. Now, the Mustang Premium is the Boss Mustang. What does that mean? Next one, please. Boss, for Mustang enthusiasts, they know what Boss means. You all know what Boss Mustang is? Everybody's saying yes, it's the hot Mustang, so forth. So therefore, this game has different artwork with Boss cars on it. This is an early concept. You've all seen pictures of it probably on the internet that when we send them out, somehow they miraculously appear everywhere when we send them to our distributors. I don't know how that is. I haven't figured that out yet. Next picture shows the artwork again, and the next picture will show you that the playfield artwork is similar, except it's different because all the cars on it that you're collecting in the middle down there, they're all Boss cars. So they're all painted up different, look different, different years, so forth and so on. And again, there's that legendary pinball illustrator, John Yawsey. He did this one too. Surprise, surprise. But if you go to the next screen is probably, next one please, probably. Oh, it's not. It's not the play field for the premium, but the play for the premium is basically, again, the same play field, but back to the original cars that were on the pro game. The artwork by Camillo Pardo, he is a famous guy among the Ford people, famous artist, and he did the back glass and the cabinets. And then you've got speech by Tanner Faust, who does a TV show and is a race car driver. And with that, we'll go to the next picture. A list of the features that you all have seen out there. You've also seen, most of you have seen this stuff already, but again, it's four pop. I'm just on the bottom part of it. And one of the things to point out is it has that the Mustang on the back panel is a holdover feature, something that hasn't been done in pinball in quite some time. And for those of you who don't know, that means that that if I got M-U-S-T-A-N and walked away, it's there for you to get the G the next time it holds over from game to game. Should be attractive on the location when people see that. Next one, please. This is the four songs and eight songs. Four songs on the Pro, eight selectable on the Premium and the Limited Edition. It's all good rock and roll, because you got to have rock and roll with pinball. And this is the eight cars that are featured on the Pro. I, of course, like the convertible because even though it's older, all cars are good if the top goes down. My car's a convertible. And convertibles are very important because suntan's important. I ride a motorcycle. I have a boat. I snowboard. It's all about suntan. That's all it is about. I look healthy. Inside, another question. Next picture. These are clubs. I happen to put this together for another country's use. Next picture. Now, these two pictures are real interesting. This is at the Chicago Auto Show. And we, in January, introduced our pinball machine. We had seven machines there on the Ford booth. The car in the front is number eight off the Mustang line. It's a 1964 Mustang convertible. It was purchased by a 22-year-old school teacher, new. She was starting to teach. Her parents took her to the Ford dealer. There was nothing that they liked in the front. So the salesman said, I got something for you in the back. It hasn't been introduced and won't be introduced for 2 days yet. So this young lady bought this car 2 days before it was introduced in Chicago. She bought it, drove it off the dealer lot that night. She still owns it. That's the same car, same owner. She owns this car since she bought it, the first one sold. The pinball machines are behind it. But the other thing that's so interesting is the other picture, much more interesting. All of the people playing these games, young people too, very important that we had a lot of young people. We're introducing more people to pinball, and part of Mustang, the purpose of Mustang, is to do just that, to get more and more people interested, a whole new set of people interested. You saw that I had Mustang clubs up there. Well, we intend Mustang club pinball events so that we can get new people into our community and into our customer base. We are in contact with car Ford dealers so that, again, we can get new people interested in pinball. And I have to tell you, some of them have as many Mustang cars as some of you have pinball machines. These people are, you know, very, very interested in their hobby, just as you are in yours. So if we can introduce more people to pinball, this is one way we have to try and do it. We did it exceptionally successfully with Harley over a period of 8 years. Corvette, designed by George Gomez, was very successful in introducing more people to pinball, and many of you know that game. So, to do all of this, what are we doing at our company? It says here I was going to talk about the future of Stern or update Stern or something like that. Give you an update about it. We're increasing our staff. We have to increase our staff. You all know that we used to make 2.5 new titles a year. Mustang's one of them for this year. We still make 2.5 new titles a year. We will still continue to do that, and we have another title after Mustang that I'm not going to tell you what is, just as I said at the beginning. But we will have, 2.5 titles this year, plus or minus. To do that, we found that we had to have different games, you've heard me say before, for different segments of the market. For the operators, for the collectors, for the enthusiasts, and then for the rec room buyers. So we do make a Pro, a premium, a limited edition, and you would think that, well, it's very similar between each. It's similar, but quite a bit of changes, a new bill of material. It's not just a copy over because there are a lot of little changes to it, some cable changes, some new cables. You know, the lights, even though we're even our Pros are all LEDs today, it's a different LED package and operated differently. So it's different cables. There's a lot of work between all these games. So what have we done? We are working to extend our design cycle from whatever it was to have teams, separate teams working on the game, sort of the old Willy way of doing it, that Willy for Williams, the Willy way of doing it. Have to have more staff to do that. We've added, John Trudeau is the playfield designer, the lead designer on Mustang. We've added a number of software guys that are rules designers. They're not just coders. Some of you know Tanyo from the enthusiast groups. We have a young man, Jack Benson, who George was playing at Emporium. That relates to beer. Okay, Emporium and beer. Emporium. That's next to beer. He was playing pinball at this location, and there was a young man playing pinball next to him, and they were talking and so forth, and so George asked him what his favorite game is, and I think it was Johnny Pneumatic, he says it's a little unusual, it's Johnny Pneumatic, and George pulls out his business card, couldn't help him anymore, you know, because it was George's game. George Gomez's game. So I said to George, this guy was a programmer, but he just loved pinball. He had just graduated to the University of Michigan, and he had a job programming. I said, you ought to hire him if he's that into pinball, because he could be a good rules guy. So Jack works for us now because he plays pinball with George, or he did play pinball with George. Jim Shear, we added Jim Shear. He came to work for us, another pinball enthusiast who had worked at Willy. He's cable designer. The bill of materials are so, we're manufacturers. My father started me, you've heard me say, in the stockroom when I was 16. You have to control the material. That bill of material, which is on one single level, is like 17 single level, meaning we have a composite bill of material. Anybody in manufacturing at all here? Got a couple. Composite bill of material, and then you have the structured bill of material. The composite bill of material with 3,500 different parts on it is 17 pages long, something like that. No, 3,500 parts, not 3,500 different parts, but it's a very long bill of material. The structured bill of material means it shows each part many times as to where it's used. And, you know, material control. We're manufacturers, material control. We're first and foremost manufacturers. Before we're game designers, we're manufacturers. If we don't design good games, if the car people don't design good Mustangs, they have nothing to manufacture. They don't make any money. They can't design another good car or another good pinball. But they got to make it well, and they got to make it efficiently. It's a business. It's all numbers. Business is numbers. My undergraduate degree is in accounting. My partner puts together, you know, with all of us working on our business plan. Our business plan each year is only 72 pages long. It's that detailed. And that's, you know, it's a business. And we intend to be here making pinballs for many years to come and have many, many more 72-page business plans. So, any event, we've added more people in another person in Dimitri and to do bill of materials, experience of that. We have a model maker, Ken, we've had for about a year. We're adding an EE soon, a new EE to our staff, as we beef this up to continue to build more and better games. But that doesn't tell us a whole bunch about beer. Now, we talked about needing different games for different segments of the market. You've all heard me do that before. And we need all these people to design them, but we also need to have some beer. We need to keep games in the street whether it be in family arcades. And I yesterday had a meeting with Nickels and Dimes. I'm thinking of Australia's time zone. Nickels and Dimes, and they're going to try some pinball, it looks like. You guys see here locally some pinballs in the movie theaters, I understand. You have a barcade here. I'm not sure if it's just videos or also has pinballs. The barcades, back up. We need pinball machines on the street, and we need them on the street so that we can continue making games. We have three customers, operators, we need all three, enthusiast collectors, rec room buyers. And if we don't have games on the street, it won't be a problem in my lifetime, but it will be ultimately in your collecting career, because the rec room buyer, he's a 45-year-old guy who played pinball when he was 20. The current 20-year-olds, if they don't see pinball on the street, when they go buy the game that they played, they're 45, they buy the game they played when they were 20, they're going to look for an old iPhone, because that's where the games are. And you guys as collectors, you know, I've said this before, you go by the McMansion, door one opens up, it's Dad's Mercedes, door two, Mom's Lexus SUV, these are rich people, door three, they bought the kid a Jeep, door four has a horse and buggy because Dad collects horse and buggies. No, it's got, you know, an old Mustang, or it's got a bathtub 356 Porsche, or maybe even a Ferrari. Cars are current. Dad collects cars. And you guys collect pinball. They're current. There's current pinballs. There's near-current pinballs. You guys aren't so big on the EMs. There's some EMs here. But if there were no pinballs out there, there wouldn't be a new group of collectors coming in. And therefore, your big collection will dwindle down, and instead of playing the game, you'll be telling everybody that pinball machine in the corner, don't touch it, it's an antique, don't touch it. We got to have games on the street. We got to have leagues and tournaments on the street. You guys got to, you know, can help pinball by not always having your leagues at home, but I hear there's some leagues that take place in one of these movie theaters. Go to the movie theaters. Go to the bars and tell them you put two pinballs in here, and every second Tuesday we're going to put, you know, seats in the stool. Seats in the stool. That's a phrase of art. Seats in the stool. And some of the guys will come in and practice. So, you know, that we need to do that to have games on the street, to have a future. And that brings us back to beer. The way I started drinking this beer with the 9 and 12, 11% alcohol, and I had a bottle at Dorky's in Tacoma when they had this show that they have up there. They gave me this double bottle of beer, and I was lucky to walk home because it had alcohol. And they tell me some of the Belgian beers are loaded with alcohol. But I'm really only interested in this beer when it's in a barcade. I go to a hamburger place in Chicago with my younger daughter when she's in town, and they also have the IPOs, the craft beers with the alcohol content listed. So I pick it there. Otherwise, I drink vodka. I mean, if they got 5% beer, I don't bother with it. You know, it's normal bottled stuff. So anyhow, the barcades, we see more and more of them in this country. We have four on the north side of Chicago now. And typically, it'll have 30, 35 upright videos from the 80s, Robotron, things like that. Easy to learn, hard to master. Young people, not necessarily gamers, they're coming in there. Instead of a DJ, they're coming in there, they're playing the games. And these are important because they have beer. Oh, no, because they have games. I got casual written here. These are casual players that become interested in games. And not just the games that are on here, many of which are easy to learn, hard to master, but they can be interested in our games. And many of these places start out with four or five pinball machines, double in size, they did in Chicago, and end up with 20 pinball machines. And they're fun places to go to as long as the games are easy to learn, hard to master, and that's what we're trying to do. Some of the games from the 90s were strictly for players, for you guys. There were many players back then, but they were strictly for players. And we don't have enough of you. We don't have enough players. We need to have the people, these young people play, so that are 20 years old with a phony ID. Shame on them. We want the 20-year-olds to play the game, to buy. Remember, we're seeding this market so they can buy a home game when they're 45. And not one of these when they're 45. So we need them to have fun and not be frustrated. We need them not to have a 45-second game when the great players have 45-minute games. We have to level it out, a little bit more chance, and yet still deep things for you all to do, easy to learn, hard to master. It goes back to my father's day at Williams and so forth, and it's just what game design has to be, whether it be for pinball or any other product. So we are trying to broaden the market with this game. We're trying to get with this game here. We're trying to service all parts of the, all segments of the market. We've added people and extended our design time in order to make better games and make all these different types, all these different models, the pro, premium, and limited edition. We also make, are continuing making our entry-level game, the Pin. So we're busy doing all that to do it. We've added more people, and the whole goal of this is to get people to drink more beer. Now, with that, I'll see if you all have any questions. I'd be happy to try to answer them. Somebody ran over, so we got limited time. Go ahead.
I believe you're right on with your collectors, with young people wanting them later on when they're older, and that's where I fit into the market too, doing things that we couldn't afford to do when we were younger. But I think from the perspective of a homeowner, I've owned a few pinball machines. I've got them now. You can find relatively many people that would work on pinball machines if you took it to their establishments. It's very difficult to get someone to come out and work on your pinball machine at home. And it's very difficult to get them in your home because of the size and the bulkiness of them. As a manufacturer, if you can do something to help them be more second market friendly, so that maybe they're modular, they can unplug, you can take off the top portion without having to take both down with you as one unit to take them in for service or to bring them into a location somewhere, a second story, would be wonderful for the secondary market, for the ease of getting them back and forth for maintaining and also to put in your homes.
Thank you. There's two things I'll say I'd like to address with that. First of all, I understand your concern, and years ago the head used to come off the game, but it was a chore. You took off four bolts inside, unplugged some things. You can't take the head off of our game. It's just as easily as you could then. It just doesn't look like you can. You can, but you really don't want to be doing that. It's a pain in the neck, too, either way that it was, either the old way or the way that we do it now and have for the last decade and a half, two decades. Call 1-800-KICKERS, and we can try and Pat or Chaz will try and refer you to somebody locally who will come to your house. They have a list of people. It still is difficult. Our entry level game is not coin op. They play great. We have a Transformers and an Avengers. I especially like the Transformers myself, but that's me because I like out-hole bonuses. It's half the weight, just a little bit smaller, half the weight of a commercial pinball machine, and that's part of what we're trying to address with it. So I understand what you're saying. I don't know how to beat it with a commercial game, so that's why we're trying to market a less expensive non-coin op, a little bit lighter, half the weight, a little bit smaller, still a full-size playfield, not full-size playfield, full playing area on the playfield. Same playing area as the games of the 80s, which is about 2 inches shorter than we have right now. So that's how we're trying to address that. But it's a valid point. Any other questions?
As part of that untapped market force being a girl, and we make 80% of the purchasing decisions in America, although, gentlemen, you still make more than we do an hour, don't worry. Would you consider, when you do the Iron Man update for the Iron Man machine for the third movie, would you consider changing it when it says, "Play again, sir," to say, "Play again, sir or ma'am," so that I can feel like I'm a valued pinball player?
You bring up an absolutely great point. Let's go back to beer for just a minute. And I just like beer, guys. I like the beer. So I'm going to go back to beer and tell you that at these barcades, you look at the barcades and you'll see guys coming in, young ladies coming in as a group, them coming in, some in dates too. You'll also see Gene Jarvis is the owner, head of Raw Thrills, which is a great video game company. He is the king of design. And he and I were going to headquarters Friday night. It was about 10 o'clock, and I had to flash a business card to get in. They had such a line outside. And sitting in the front playing Pac-Man, of course, it happened to be Pac-Man that day. You see it on pinball, too. You go in Emporium, you see, you know, young ladies playing pinball, just them. I don't talk about future games, so I can't tell you there's an Iron Man update. Having said that, or not, but it's a great game. Having said that, your point is really important. And that is, we are a mostly, all over the world, Caucasian male sport. But we are not, Caucasian male is not the majority. We've isolated half the population, women. But also, we need to attract other ethnic groups to our hobby. There's a few people at this show who are not white male Caucasians. Most of them are women that are either interested in pinball or with a guy who's interested in pinball. But the point that you is much broader than what you say, just, you know, a few words. We need to broaden the base of pinball. Now, I tried something years ago that didn't work, and that was I put Spanish speech in pinball, and then the Germans saw it. We won German, and the French wanted French, and the Italians wanted Italian, and we were doing four languages. It all started out for Hispanic bars in America. Didn't work real good, except for when we made a soccer-themed game, which they call football, and which you can't sell in the rest of America for some reason. And it became, you know, prohibitively expensive as the business got a little smaller and so forth to do this. But I will, you know, something we tried hasn't worked yet. We need to address both male, female, and ethnic mix on our player base. One thing, if you have a Sopranos and you need to get the speech chip for Italian, first of all, our Italian customers tell me it's great Italian, it's really translatable, it's really right. But the second thing is, I don't understand a word of Italian, but the game plays great in Italian. You need to try this. It's really fun. It belongs in Italian. Yes, sir.
So, as customers, we're seeing or perceiving quite a resurgence in pinball, or as collectors. How are you measuring that, you know, as a company? What are you seeing? Are you having
see a resurgence worldwide. Thanks. Our business is up. Since the Lehman Brothers recession, when we stripped the company and had to rebuild it, but business is up worldwide, so we see that there is a resurgence, and we see a resurgence not just in our sales numbers, but in barcades opening up selling beer. Okay, I'm really into this barcade thing and other street locations. Having games on the street tells us that. I mean, not everybody can afford at home a $5,000 or a used $2,000 or $3,000 pinball machine. They need to be able to afford it by putting quarters into it. And that's how we have a broader base. Maybe they'll become collectors later. Maybe not. Maybe there'll be games produced for you for later. There won't be if nobody's putting quarters in them. So, you know, barcades, beer, regular bars, go to your neighborhood bar, take your group there that competes, and they say, we'll bring our league every other week here. Get us two pinball machines. Yes?
I have one last thing. As a teacher, I teach at an inner city school. My students are not white. Most of them are not girls. So I was wondering, would you ever consider donating pinball machines to inner city schools that don't have outdoor playgrounds so that when we have to have indoor recess for our students, we have something else for them to play? With the four player, it helps them learn how to take turns and play together and achieve goals. And it would be a really good way to broaden your demographics.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. The economics are difficult, but I can't say it wouldn't make sense somewhere. We tend to do our charity in the Chicagoland area because we're in Chicago. Okay, that's now on the list. That's not something for me to come back to here. It's for me to come back to. Interesting idea. I'll tell you what we found interesting, though. We have young hopeful engineers from some of the schools that are not suburbanite schools. We've had tours, in the factory of, these are whether it be engineering or junior college you're going to go to or college, whatever it is. We've had people, kids come in and tour them and show them what we do and show them some of the solid work stuff, as I'm saying, and what have you. And we do that kind of thing. But what you suggest is an interesting concept. Interesting. Yeah.
The line workers, which of your games have they found the easiest to learn?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Interesting question. I don't know. Though I will say that, first of all, we're manufacturers. We're Chicagoland manufacturers, and yeah, we got an ethnic mix out in the line in the factory part, as we do in the overhead group. But some of these people have been making pinball machines. Our company was started in 86, so we're nearing 30 years old. Some of them have been with us since the beginning. Some of them worked on Bally's line prior there, too. Some of the people at Advanced, if you were in Steve's presentation yesterday, you saw Gabby doing bill of materials. She came out of the factory. Chaz, who some of you have talked to, is absolutely great. He was a final inspector in our factory, so they've moved up in the organization. I can't answer your question, but I can tell you that these people have been doing pinball for a long time, so I'm not sure that they have that much trouble figuring them out. And they're doing sort of a rote testing, usually, more than playing them. They know that when they do this, this should light, that type of thing. Any other questions?
I understand that you purchased the Bally and Williams intellectual property rights, so I don't know, whenever.
No, we didn't. No. We don't have the Bally Williams rights. That would be Planetary. Okay. Has them. And Cunningham had some. I don't know what the relationship between what Illinois Pinball and what Planetary has, but they're the ones with the Bally Williams rights.
Well, let me ask you what I really wanted to ask you is, have you considered remanufacturing or reproducing some of the top-selling tables from the 90s?
Actually, Planetary is here with Medieval Madness, which is not a top-selling table, but it's a top table. What do I mean by that? It was not made in 93, 94 when the volumes were the largest. It was made substantially after that, but it is, as most of you know, one of the most valuable pinball tables out there. They seem to be doing a nice job of recreating it, so they are doing that. We don't make somebody else's tables. First of all, they have the Bally Williams rights. We don't make somebody else's tables. We make our own tables. We make a pinball machine for 2-3 years. Harley we made for 6 years, had to renew the license a couple times. Steve just walked in, we made Spider-Man for a long time. And so we remake our own tables as they were. As far as totally redoing them, we did two different Simpsons, totally different, unrelated, just the same title. But we make 2.5 new models a year. 2.5 new titles a year, again in the 3 configurations: Pro, Premium, Limited Edition, and that's our business model. I hope I answered your question. Go look at Medieval Madness. Both the originals are out here, and Planetaries are here. You'll see what they're doing. But again, the price point of a limited edition or a remake is different than the operator price point for a pro game. And you're playing a pro Mustang out here, which is a lot of game for a street game for an operator, all LEDs, which I think modernized the heck out of a pinball machine. And there'll be more stuff in the premium and the LE for the collectors and enthusiasts. Yes, sir.
My question is, I've got a 14-year-old son who loves pinball. He had tried to get him to bring one of his friends with him. All of them rolled their eyes. How can you get your machines into places that are primarily ticket redemption, like the bowling alleys and Dave and Buster's, for example, where these kids that are 12 to 20 are at, not just the barcades?
Okay. We have a ticket redemption add-on to our pinball, either ticketless or with tickets. We have been playing with it. I'm going to say playing because we're so busy restructuring ourselves and getting us into these teams and extended design cycles to make three different versions of the same title that we haven't carried it as far as we'd like to. However, I have a customer in Australia, in Surface Paradise, which I didn't get to spend enough time visiting him. It's a very nice place. I flew into Brisbane, rented a Harley and rode up there, so it was fun. But then I had a meet. Turned out they were having an international time zone meeting there. But the reason I got them to test the redemption game is I knew that if anybody's going to get it to work, they did. And they did, and their redemption pinball, they have a pinball club with 70, 80 members that play regularly there, and they have pinball club machines here, and in the redemption area, they have redemption machines that make twice what the pinball club machines make and make about what a skee ball makes. So we're trying to get there. If you look at the FEC in America, it is a redemption location. I think getting them in front of the kids that age is a good goal. I also think getting them in front of kids that are drinking beer is a good goal. I like that beer.
Okay.
By the way, I own no beer, no stock in any beer companies.
Last question.
Does Stern Pinball have any kind of history relation with Chicago Coin Op?
With Chicago Coin? Chicago Coin, Chicago Dynamic Industries DBA, Chicago Coin, was an old game company in the Chicagoland area. In 1976, their bank foreclosed. I was a bankruptcy lawyer. Their bank foreclosed, took over the assets, and a company was formed, Stern Electronics, whose games are out here in a row, and it purchased the assets of CDI, and it operated as a pinball company and a video company until 1984, at which point the market had significantly deteriorated, and it closed. In 1986, Date East Pinball was formed, which is us. We sold it to its 20% to Data East's 20% shareholder Sega in 94. I bought it from Sega in 99, so we just changed the name. So it is unrelated to Chicago Coin. Stern Pinball is unrelated to Chicago Coin, unrelated to Stern Electronics other than I'm Stern. And it is the same company, Data East, Sega, Stern Pinball. Okay? Whew, that was a big explanation. Yeah. I think we have to let the next person in here. Are you the next person? Oh, Jim. Hey, Jim, I thought you were going to do mine for me. You said, I did something different. Is that okay? Okay? Jim Shelberg is next. I thank you all very much. If you all have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them anytime. Thank you for your interest in pinball. Thank you for having Stern Electronics Games. Thank you all.